Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. Welcome to this week's show. Jeremy and Gretchen, welcome.
Hello.
Hi there.
G, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I don't know, but we'll figure it out because we've got a great show this week. We've actually got two good interviews. We're going to be talking about e-waste a little later in the show.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it is a fascinating topic. This was our Tech Wednesday last week, and it's something that we've had a lot of questions on. So we're going to have an expert come in from one of the companies that actually does the recycling. His name is Tyler, and he's going to tell us how you get involved with that. Our other interview this week is on Virginia City, Nevada. Now, for those that don't know what Virginia City is, it's what's called a living ghost town. And it's about, oh, Gretchen, what, 45 minutes from Reno?
Maybe even closer than that.
Yeah, something like that. And his name is Doc, and he's been doing documentary, believe it or not, up there, and is also a cosplayer that does some of the reenactment presentations that they do in the ghost town. So he's going to be on telling us all about that. What's in the news?
Netflix listens to subscribers.
Well, that's a good thing.
I think that's a great thing.
I think that's absolutely wonderful. And what we actually have going on here is Netflix has usually been pretty good about this, listening to what their subscribers give them as feedback and that type of thing. And what specifically is going on here is there's been one request that's been made for a while and up until now was kind of ignored. And that is that autoplay feature. So when you load the Netflix app, it starts playing something at random just by itself. And there was no way to turn that off, and people were not finding that to be too enjoyable in a lot of cases. So what they've done is they've added a function that's in your user account profile where you can turn off autoplay during the previews, and you can turn off autoplay to the next episode. They're two different options. I've left the next episode on, so if I'm watching something, it goes on. But that's now something that's in your scope of ability to control. The one little gotcha on this is I have not been able to do this from either the PlayStation or my Fire TV. I had to do it from my computer desktop to be able to go in and change the setting. So it does work. It just doesn't seem to work across all devices. Now, once you turn it off from the desktop, it does shut it off on all your other devices. You just can't make the selection from the other devices.
I've used Netflix twice. I actually have an account, but I just never use it. I saw two movies and that was it.
Well, gee, they have talkies now and it's in color.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah. Wow.
So what's next?
Progress coming on a skin printer.
Yeah, so this is kind of cool.
It's an incredible
technology.
This is incredible.
3D printers. They actually are starting to be able to print skin for burn victims and other people that need these type of things medically. And it's something that's coming into its own now. It still is a prototype and it's still something that has to be approved and all that kind of thing. But the fact that we actually have this kind of technology is really cool. I mean, we're getting close to the idea of a dermal regenerator from Star Trek, and it's something that can really especially burn victims,
yes,
improve absolutely. Their quality of life, and eliminate a lot of the pain that goes along with that type of a thing.
I mean, I have a zillion questions on this. You get skin material somehow, and print, I mean, it's like, I know it'll print from paper or cardboard. So, but how do you make skin?
You know, you're actually kind of right on the path there. You get material that's a biological material that's able to be used for this purpose. The technology itself is similar to a 3D printer where you can print something that's plastic,
right,
but a, you know, 3D object, that kind of idea.
You can print it right to the specifications of the person's burn or whatever.
Exactly.
So how about for cosmetic?
Cosmetic use, cosmetic, yeah.
Stuff. Yeah, so I want to look younger. I'm 70. I want to look 50 or 30.
In your case, I don't think we could have much luck, but for most of our listening audience, there's actually a lot of good applications to this. The first one being the burn victims in medical, but cosmetics and dermatology, anything to go along with that could benefit from this type of a technology.
So this would be back to enhancement stuff, like, you know, breast implants and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, anything like that.
I'm going to invest in this.
I think you should.
I'm really, as an investment, that might be a good one.
It's interesting. In the late 1890s, it makes me think of the idea that a great inventor had said that everything that could be invented has been invented. And that attitude was prevalent in the scientific community, and we're proving that it's not so. There's new technologies coming out every day, and we're seeing a lot of different things. And
when are we going to print whole people?
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. Next
question there. We'll talk about cybernetics.
Windows 7 bug prevents shutdown.
So, Gretchen, would you have a problem with not being able to turn off your computer?
Yeah.
Because that's what's happening here. Now, interestingly enough, and we're going to talk about planned obsolescence a little bit later in the show, talking about e-waste and stuff. This seems to have happened right after support for Windows 7 went away. And there's a bug that has turned up somehow that the shutdown function doesn't work all the time. So you want to turn off your computer? Well, you can unplug it. But if you click start and then shut down, it doesn't respond.
So is this Microsoft did this?
Well, they're not. We haven't been able to get anything for sure on where this bug came from, but almost certainly it is.
So why?
Well, if you're running Windows 7 and they no longer support it, they want you to upgrade to a new version, Windows 10.
They're forcing you.
It's a form of that, yeah.
Yes.
In my opinion.
In mine, too.
What's next?
NASA brings Voyager 2 back online, 11.5 billion miles from Earth.
Yay! Yeah, this is cool. This is cool.
This is one of my favorite topics ever. I've been following these. There's Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, which were launched in like 1970 and 1971, I think. And Voyager 2 went first.
Yeah.
So one of them went to Jupiter and Saturn and then hung a right. The other one went to Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, and hung a left. And they're right now, both of them are on the at 11.5. They're trying to decide, are they out of the actual solar system? Because the solar wind goes that far. So there's big debate going on as to whether, but these were made in the 1970s, 60s, 1960s. 1960s technology, and they still work.
They still work, yeah.
So the question is, how long does it take the radio signal to get from here to 11.5 billion miles?
Okay, Voyager 1 is 20 hours. Voyager 2 is 16.5 hours for each transmission.
So I send a text to go home, get a good night's sleep, come back, and maybe it responds.
I mean, you can, and it's interesting if you look at it. You either have interstellar space, which is where these are, or you have my texting service, which takes about that long to get the message through. So, you know, teaches all right. Yeah.
In fact, it may be quicker in most cases. Yeah.
You know, via the heliopause for our science geeks out there. All right, what do we got next?
Okay, Tesla disables features on used cars.
Yeah, we're going to be covering this on our next Tech Wednesday. This is something that has been grumbling, I'll tell you. So, if you buy a new car, it comes with a lot of cool features. If you buy the car used from somebody else, a lot of those features go away. At least that's what Tesla's trying to do here, because they're saying that if you're the second owner of their car, you didn't pay for the tech. And if you don't pay for the tech, you don't get things like the autopilot feature and numerous other things that they're shutting down. And Tesla isn't the only one that's doing this. They're doing it maybe for this reason, but I've run into this personally with a new car I bought that's made by BMW that has a thing called Connected Drive, which will no longer work. Newer versions might. This one doesn't. They're not saying it's because I bought it as a used car. They're saying it because since the car's a couple of years old, they've changed the technology. And once it's turned off, it can't be turned back on. So those original features don't work anymore. To me, it seems like that would bring the value of your car down. You know?
Uh-huh. Yes, I agree totally. So it's not worth it if they have a high price.
Look for lawsuits.
The Tesla thing really bugged me because they had enabled the auto drive feature when the guy went to test drive it. So he bought it with the feature enabled.
And then they disabled
it. And he got it off the lot. Tesla reached into his car and turned it off, saying he didn't pay for it.
Gee, I think you got it right there with the lawsuits.
Yeah, you know, I had the same thing. I have a Toyota Highlander. It has one of those things where you can go, where's the nearest gas station, all that kind of stuff. It never works for me. It works when I take it to the dealer. But the thing is when I went and complained about it, they said, well, you need an update. That's $200.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't tell me that when I bought the car, that I would have to pay for the update.
It is a fact that car manufacturers are trying to make their cars like smartphones, where you have this idea where you have to pay a monthly fee and revenue and all that type of thing. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about that here in coming weeks.
This week, we got to see Sonic the Hedgehog, which is an interesting movie based on a video game on the old Sega system from a number of years ago. Now, admittedly, I'm a fan of the game, so I kind of was looking forward to seeing this and actually enjoyed the movie, more or less. The description of it is, after discovering a small, blue, fast hedgehog, a small-town police officer must help it defeat an evil genius who wants to do experiments on it. And basically what's going on here is you have an alien who has a superpower, and he is afraid of people stealing that power, but he is going to use it to defend his friends. I don't know, getting in there is a movie that just opened yesterday for Valentine's Day. It was kind of fun to watch. It is a turn-your-brain-off type thing, but you sit down and just kind of have 2 hours of not having to think about the rest of the world. I enjoyed seeing it. I don't know if I would recommend seeing this one in theaters, though. If you want to for Valentine's Day, that's great. Otherwise, maybe wait until it comes out on DVD. But if you're a fan of Sonic or a fan of the old Sega video games, it has all of the clicks and tones and all of that type of stuff in there and will make you think of a time past. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Joining me now is Doc Durton, interviewed by Steve Moeller, who's going to be talking about filmmaking in Virginia City.
Well, Bill, thank you for that toss. And I'm on location here in Virginia City with a very good friend of mine, a filmmaker named Doc Durton, who I've been associated with for about 6 years. And the interesting thing about Doc is he runs Virginia Nevada Studios. And he's a filmmaker, and his favorite genre is the Western and the cowboy, and basically period pieces from the 19th century. And if you saw Doc walking up and down the streets of Virginia City, the first thing you'd notice about him is that he is dressed for the period and very authentically. So, Doc, thank you for coming to the show. I appreciate you coming on.
Steve, how do you do? Good seeing you again.
It's always good to see you, my friend.
Absolutely.
And, so you and I have had a kind of interesting year this past 2019.
Yes.
You've been on my sets over the last 6 years. I've been on your sets over the last 6 years. And last year, you gave me the privilege of being involved in a couple of stories, short films that you were doing, one being the Gunfight at OK Corral recreation from Tombstone, very popular Western film. And also an interesting take on a Jesse James story called Jesse James the Lady, where it was an all-female cast. And I don't mean to sound like we're bragging, but you entered those, I think, four of your films into
four.
A film festival out in, I think it was Vacaville, California.
Vacaville, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And they did really well. And in fact, Lady Jesse James came home with a finalist trophy called a Westie, which I had never heard of, but nonetheless, I've learned it to be coveted.
Yeah, yeah.
So congratulations for that. It's very well deserved. Tell us a little bit about, as a producer director, what stories inspire, how do you get inspired to approach a story to do as a film?
Well, this one here, while I was doing the Wild West Festival at the same time, it was a huge event. And I needed advertising material. And so what I did is that I decided to do a little mini movie and what better movie to reenact is Gunfight the OK Corral.
Very popular.
Yeah, and I had the people.
Yes.
They were very, look-alike. Absolutely, they were terrific.
Yeah, one of the things I love about the films that you do is that your actors not only have a great deal of enthusiasm, but we just kind of come together and do it as a family.
Yes, yes.
And there are no egos.
No.
And
no.
In fact, everyone it just has a great time doing it. And their costuming and their props are also very period authentic, which is really, really neat because you don't see that in a lot of Hollywood films.
Yeah, and exactly right. As a matter of fact, I did a Hollywood film one time. Deadwood. Series of Deadwood.
Oh, that's
and
right.
The reason why we got hired is because we had the authentic costume.
Okay.
So you're right.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that, which was very, very cool. So you kind of hanging around a lot of the extras and the actors and, between setups.
Yep.
Well, I'm sure that was a riot.
It was a lot of fun.
Wow.
I could shake hands with Keith Carradine.
Nice.
He was at the next table.
Yeah.
We were in saloon number 13. Yeah,
wow.
And it was a wonderful experience. Absolutely.
Nice. So I also know that you're also quite busy, not just behind the camera, but in preparation. I mean, you've built yourself several really neat sets. You've got a saloon, you've got a sheriff's office, a jail, a courthouse. I mean, you have a lot of authentic sets that you yourself have created.
Yes.
So it's that you truly have a working studio.
That I do. As a matter of fact, as you know, you being part of the crew filming Jesse James and Gunfight the OK Corral, we used that space quite well.
Yes, you do.
In other words, we're able to shift things around. We got the wall that actually moves back and forth, depending upon how big you want a room or not. Uh-huh. And it works out absolutely wonderfully well. The ends, both ends of the building, they roll out.
Yes.
So
I remember having to prop up to make a street scene.
Yeah, make a street scene, absolutely.
But it worked really well.
So yeah.
It worked great.
Yeah. Works great. And so now it's all been redone for the new movie that I'm doing, which is called Leland. And I need a jail cell and the judge's office and the judge's bench, the whole courtroom scene. Well, my movie lady, or my movie wife, I should say, got arrested for murder. And so that's the reason why we need the courthouse, right, and the jail and all that stuff. So we start filming again. We already have two scenes that are done. We start filming again in this Thursday coming up.
Oh.
Yeah. Huh. Because the sheriff is off that day.
Okay. So you mentioned that the next story that you're doing is Leland, and that's based on Leland.
Well, Leland Stanford. Okay. Yeah, University of Stanford. It goes back to the mid 1800s.
Okay.
And actually, I'm in this movie. I'm not normally in my movies, but I'm playing Leland.
Okay. And he was basically like a railroad baron.
Yes. Oh, yes. Very influential. He was into a lot of different things, and he was president of most.
Okay.
And even the governor of California for a while.
Now the slant of this movie is it kind of like the way you've described it to me is almost like a Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, where his wife has two sides to her persona. Mm-hmm. The nice Victorian lady of society.
Very proper.
But she's also very highly protective of him to the point where she kills for him.
Yes, yes. And she did. And
now, is this based on a real event?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. It's not the life and time to Leland Stanford.
So you have some creative license going here.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, well,
very creative.
Well, that's what a filmmaker does anyway.
Yeah, it's a twist that nobody really expects. But it's there, and it shows the versatility and the acting skills of Michelle Bachman. She is absolutely terrific.
Well, she was one of the Lady Jesse James characters.
Yes,
she was part of the posse. Yeah. Okay, nice. So when you're directing a scene, what I've noticed on your set is that you don't necessarily follow a hard script.
No.
You actually invite the actors to kind of take your main idea, what you want them to emote, what you want to come across in the scene, and you just kind of let things develop organically between the actors.
I tell you, I've had scripts before, and all I have to do is just guide them and tell them this is what I need from A to B. Mm-hmm. And then once you go, and then I give it to them. I want you to become this person.
Right.
And the stuff that I get, I could not put on paper.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant what they bring to the set.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's kind of fun witnessing that. Because it's in a way it taught me a little bit about a directing style, because my style is not quite that way, but I like that it's organic, and I like that you kind of give your actors a kind of a creative space and a creative license to do their own thing. Well, I mean, 8 minutes isn't enough to talk to you, so there's a very good chance that that Bill, Jeremy, and Gretchen may want to bring you back for a follow up, especially as you continue working on Leland and other projects that you have going. We certainly have enjoyed having you on the show, and I know that you and I are going to continue to be very busy together.
Thank you. Yes, we will.
All right. Well, Doctor, thank you so much. And Bill, Gretchen, and Jeremy, back to you in the studio.
Steve, thank you so much for that interview. That was really interesting. It's kind of cool to hear about all the things that are going on. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break.
Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. This is the section of the show where we answer your questions. Send us your questions. It's one User Friendly on Facebook or Twitter or userfriendlyshow.com online. The other thing you can do is give us a call, 503-766-6264, and we'll get your message and possibly put you on the air or not, depending on what you prefer, but we will at least get your question. And what is our first question?
Do you recommend Amazon earbuds?
No.
Me neither.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah, I wouldn't either, but hey, whatever.
Now, gee, I know you've done a little bit of research on earbuds.
Well, the thing about earbuds is all these people are wearing them, and you're damaging your ears. If you crank those things up, you're damaging your ears. I damaged my ears from headphones years in working in radio, rock radio, cranked the music up full blast in my headphones, and I do a 4-hour shift and never take my headphones off. Plus that, I'm a drummer. So as a drummer, a lot of times when I was practicing songs, I had an electronic kit, I would put headphones on and crank everything up to full blast. You have to be really careful with anything in your ear, and we're going to have an audiologist on in the next couple of weeks to talk about that. But it's really important to know that if you crank those things up, you're damaging your ears.
Now, specific to the Amazon earbuds, I gave these a try to see what they were. So there's different kinds of earbuds out there. They're the Apple ones, which are the little white ones, which are actually kind of cool. But the Amazon ones I found to be heavy. I had a difficult time getting them to work. They kept falling out of my ear. So no, I would have to say specifically for that, I do not recommend them.
Okay, what is IMDb?
Gee, why don't you take this one?
That is Internet Movie Database, and it's a database with everything you want to know about movies. If there's a particular movie you want, you put it in the search bar, and it comes up the director, all the actors, producers, music, all that kind of stuff. It's all there. I've been using it for years as a movie critic. It was a lot more helpful than having to delve into the memory. Yeah, we used to have books like 6 inches thick to find, and they were never up to date. But it's just all information you need on movies. It's a great site, imdb.com. They just redid it. I don't like the way they redid it, because I'm always looking at current movies, and they're kind of hard to find now compared to what's coming up and all that stuff. But it's a really terrific site if you're a movie buff.
Yeah, little known fact on it, too. IMDb is actually owned by Amazon now.
No way.
Yep. That's part of the redo that was in there. But anybody that's on there, any professional actors, movies, absolutely, all the different agents, all of that kind of stuff, it's absolutely a really good resource for that.
It's an incredible resource for movies. One of the best. Much better than Rotten Tomatoes or anything. Rotten Tomatoes just rates movies, but IMDb also rates them, but it's most about movies. Next up.
Am I required to use a screen lock on Android devices?
So this is kind of a two-pronged question. According to Google, no. The answer to that is no. However, and there's a big however on this, if you're using a Gmail address as the account that you have your Android device tied to, as part of an organization that has screen lock turned on as a requirement, then yes, you do have to do this. And one of the issues that was run into on this from the person that asked the question is they had a device that it had forced them to turn on the screen lock, and then what it did was encrypted the tablet, and it wouldn't even boot Android until you put the password in. So it's like you turned it on, and then if you waited for it to start, it didn't start. And they were, let me just tell you, very frustrated with that. And the only way to get it out of there was to go to the account that was set up under, disable the management requirement for a screen lock, and then factory reset the device to get the password out of it. So
that seems a bit much.
You know, actual requirement, no, but a lot of organizations have it.
Yeah, that's kind of difficult for the regular person. Okay. How much does it cost to get a domain name? Is $2,000 too much?
Gee, would you pay $2,000 for a domain name?
No.
Yeah, it's a B.
I would pay $2,000 for almost anything.
No, so, this is true. So maybe you're not the person to ask, right?
And what is $2,000? I haven't, you know.
No, but the reality of the situation here is this depends a little bit on what you're doing, but be suspicious if you get a price like that. Now, when you register a domain like a .com or a .org, and it's not one that anybody has had before. So in other words, you're the first person to register it. It would be nowhere near that amount. Some of the other extensions do cost more and they're still legitimate. And the amount can vary from different extensions. So a .org is a different price than a .com, which is a different price than a .something else. Now, in this particular case, when I talked to the listener about this, it was legit. But what it was is somebody else owned the domain he wanted before he did, and they were reselling it. And when it comes up on the reseller market, you can ask anything you want, but if you want to do that, negotiate, because the bottom line of it is that any of these things are subject to negotiation, and you can ask for the moon, but you won't necessarily get it. It's one of those type of situations where at the end of the day, you get what you negotiate, and in this particular situation, he was able to negotiate this particular domain name down to $490. So it was over 75% off the asking price, and he was able to get it, and it was all legitimate. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Joining me today is Tyler Davis, the Annual Fund and Events Associate for Free Geek. Tyler, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So let's start out. What is Free Geek?
So Free Geek, in its essence, is where old technology comes to find new life. We are a electronics recycler where people can come in and bring their old or used items of technology, and we either recycle it or refurbish it and redistribute it to our community, to people in need of digital access.
Okay, so that sounds absolutely incredible. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the topic of e-waste, and e-waste is becoming a bigger deal. Is this something that you've been running into? And for, I guess let's actually take a step back and describe, what is e-waste?
Well, and the other thing is there tons and tons of it every year in this country alone.
Yeah, so e-waste is electronic waste, and it's estimated that the United States produces around 7 million tons of e-waste every year. And so when these materials go and sit in a landfill, they are incredibly hazardous and pose a threat to both human and environmental health. So what we do at Free Geek is we kind of take those materials and we recycle it up to the highest environmental standards. And so to kind of put it in perspective, last year we processed over 27,000 pounds of circuit boards. And from those circuit boards, we were able to salvage about 5 pounds of gold. And through traditional mining methods, it takes about 17.5 million pounds of ore to produce the amount of gold that we recovered from circuit boards just last year.
So that means there's a lot of money buried in this stuff.
Money, yes, but also these precious metals are able to be recycled and reused in other electronics. So we kind of don't have to do any more harm to the environment through mining for precious metals.
Well, see, the thing, when I'm looking at this, I'm looking at, people don't realize that when they throw that TV away, that or the phone, when I was studying this, and I spent a lot of time looking at this, manufacturers deliberately make their products to die.
Right.
They update things to where you can't update your phone or whatever. So you're forced to buy something new and throw the old one away. And this is where you come into play. You can make some of these old ones kind of new.
Absolutely. So planned obsolescence is a major issue that we've been discussing for several years, and it's been getting a lot more attention. There are more smartphones in the world than there are people.
Right.
And we are turning over technology so fast, and oftentimes it's still usable and valuable. And so one of the things, I'm going to answer this question in kind of two parts. So one of the things that we do is we'll take that technology and we'll refurbish it and give it to people in need of digital access. So people who are in need of a smartphone or in need of a laptop or a computer. And then we are also working to help try to push right to repair legislation, which is basically saying that consumers have the right to repair the devices. And this legislation would force manufacturers to provide the tools, knowledge, and original manufactured parts to consumers and to third-party refurbishers so that they're able to repair their own devices.
So here, and I'm a manufacturer. I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm a manufacturer, and this legislation passes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to jack up the price of my product. So does that make the product all that affordable at that point?
I mean, that is a question kind of outside of our realm. Our whole focus with providing technologies, we have a store where we provide things at really low and reduced costs for people. And so that part for us wouldn't change. But right to repair would allow us to be more productive with repairing and refurbishing devices, so we're able to get more back out into the community.
Yeah, and I wasn't being critical, because I like the idea of that, because Bill and I have been talking about this. We're going to try to get a lawyer on to talk about companies deliberately doing this to force me to buy something else.
Now, is it possible to recycle anything electronic?
Yes and no. I mean, there are some things like old CRT monitors are very challenging for us to recycle. We actually have to send those to a different recycler to have them broken down, because they are so hazardous and filled with such toxic materials that we can't do anything with them on site. And there are a couple little things here and there that we cannot recycle in-house, because a lot of our programs, like actually all of our recycling reuse programs, are run by volunteers. And so they come in and they dismantle computers, like whole desktops to smaller components, but things we don't want them to touch are like power supplies because they still hold the charge.
Right.
And we wouldn't want anybody to, you know, electrocute themselves.
You don't want somebody to have something dangerous. And I know with the CRTs, those are one of the few that are seem to be very hard to try to recycle.
Mm-hmm.
I've run into it. If you find a place, they usually charge for them, and other things they don't, that kind of a difference. Now, if you're taking a device that you're going to actually reuse, so you're not breaking it down, but you're going to fix it. A lot of our devices, our tablets, laptops, and so on, store personal information. How does one deal with that before they would give the device to be recycled?
So you can wipe it yourself, or as soon as you bring it in, anything that is data bearing, from a Roku to a smart TV to your iPhone to a tablet or a personal laptop, anything that could potentially hold any personal information is sent right into our secure data area and is wiped up to the highest standards. I cannot tell you the acronym for the standards or what it means because I don't remember.
Sure.
but we also offer certificates of destruction for people who want that guarantee that their data was wiped. And if we can't wipe the data, we destroy the hard drive.
Okay. So if your situation, the data would not get back out somehow
Absolutely
to somebody
not.
Else. Okay. Because that's been a big concern, definitely one of our questions. So, all right. I guess the next thing to talk about here is how somebody actually would go about recycling something. So how does this work? How do they get to you?
And we only have about a minute.
All right. So we're located in Southeast Portland off of 10th and Mill. But if you're outside of the area, there's a we are part of a national organization called the Alliance for Technology Refurbishing and Reuse. And they're a network that supports nonprofit refurbishing recycle communities. And on their website, they have a map of 82 different tech recyclers and refurbishers all across the country that people can go and donate technology at.
Okay, so this is a nationwide option.
Yeah, it is a nationwide movement.
Right, right. No, that's great.
And it's much needed. I really agree with that. I didn't know about e-waste until we started researching.
You're absolutely. All right, you gave the name of the organization, the website, and the Twitter, Facebook. How do people actually find you?
Freegeek.org is our website. Our Facebook is Freegeek Mothership. And our Twitter, I believe, is also Freegeek Mothership, but don't quote me on that.
All right, we'll get all of that confirmed and get it out on our social media at One User Friendly. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Great show this week with us. And we were just talking to Tyler Davis, the annual fund and events associate for Freegeek. And Tyler, I want you to talk a little bit about redistributing tech.
Yeah. So we have a number of programs that are digital inclusion programs that focus around giving technology back into the community to people in need of digital access. The first one is our Plug Into Portland program, where anyone who is a K-12 student and they volunteer 24 hours in their community can apply with us for this program and receive a free refurbished computer from Freegeek. And that's all about bridging the homework gap and helping students get the technology they need to be successful in school. Other programs are our Welcome to Computers program, where we work with community partners to, we go into vulnerable communities with cohorts of 10 people and we teach them how to use a computer from like, here's a mouse, here's a keyboard, all the way through here's how to send an email. And we give a computer at the end of the program. And so this program works with immigrants, refugees, elderly populations, and we have it translated in about 8 languages. And then we have our traditional volunteer adoption program, where people can come and volunteer at Freegeek for 24 hours, and then they are able to receive a free computer from us as well. And then we also grant technology to nonprofits in need of technology. So if you're a nonprofit and you had your computers crash or something happen, or you need new computers, you can apply for a hardware grant from us absolutely free, and we'll be able to provide you with what you need.
So listener question is, if we have a lot of people that listen to the show are technically inclined, can they just volunteer for you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. You can come and volunteer at Freegeek. Call us at our office line and we'll be able to get you registered for volunteer shift.
All right, that sounds good. And we'll have those phone numbers and the social media and all of the different ways to get in touch with Tyler and his team at our website and at our social media, which is One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter, userfriendlyshow.com. Coming up, we're going to have some great content for you in the next couple of weeks. We are going to be at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco in March. This is going to be a great show. Like E3, we get to talk about a lot of the new things that are coming out on the market and some of the new games, game consoles. We're looking at a new generation of PlayStation and Xbox for the holiday season this year. So it's going to be very interesting to see some of the technology that's coming out there and some of the different things that they are doing with that. Another event that we're going to be doing that's going to be kind of new and a little bit off the rails this year is the UFL Festival. This is something that's been going on.
UFO
Festival.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, so
gee, thank you for that. Yeah, the UFO Festival.
Well, I'm from another planet, so I don't.
So you, there might be more than one Acuron, right?
Yeah.
But in this case, it's the UFO Festival. It's been going on for quite some time and a number of years. So we're going to get down there and kind of see what's going on with all of that and what all the different aliens are doing. And that type of a thing. Gee, are you going to join us for that?
I'm kind of spaced out now, so I'm not
thank
sure.
Thank you. Yes. On that
you know, note, but I would really like to. I think it'd be fun.
This is User-Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User-Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2020 User-Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User-Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.